It's time for Matt Geek Gab, and I'll bring us our quick tip of the week. I noticed on my iPhone that my personal hotspot in settings, personal hotspot, allow others to join, was turned on. And what that does is it broadcasts an SSID from my phone. Anybody that's logged into my Apple ID account or my family's account can already see it, whether that switch is on or not. This was broadcasting an SSID, and based on a little research, I think it at some level negatively impacts battery life. It might not have a huge impact, but it certainly impacts it somewhat. So my recommendation is, and what I've done and what my family did, because everybody's was on for some reason, is to turn it off. Now, if you need to connect, say, your Kindle or something like that, then you do want to turn it on. And specifically with the Kindle, you also want to turn on maximize compatibility, because that allows 2.4 gigahertz devices to connect, not just 5 gigahertz devices. More quick tips like this, plus your questions answered maybe, but definitely some cool stuff found today on Mac Geek Gab 1067 for Monday, December 9th, National Pastry Day 2024. Woo! Folks, and indeed, welcome to Mac Geek Gab, the show where we share quick tips like that. We share cool stuff found. We share questions with answers. We really try to arrange things so that each and every one of us, me included, him included, all of us, learn at least 5 new things every single time we get together. And sometimes that means 15 new things, because if you, well, anyway. Sponsors for this episode include 1Password.com/MGG. That's where you can go and learn more about 1Password Extended Access Management, because that solves the problems that traditional IAM and MDM cannot. And also, BBEdit from Barebones.com, my favorite text editor. We'll talk more about both of those in a little bit. For now, here in Durham, New Hampshire, I'm Dave Hamilton.
And here in South Dakota, I'm Adam Christensen.
And here also in New Hampshire, it's Pilot Pete and learning 5 new things. Dave, I think we need to codify that and say, but you can't forget 7 new things or old things. Because I seem to be pushing more penguins off the iceberg every time than, yeah, than I'm gaining anymore. But hey, show 1067, yep, pretty cool thing. 2 codes on that today that are really apropos. The Windows error 1067 means the process terminated unexpectedly. And the 1067 code, at least for Walnut Creek, California, is a person calling for help. So if you're calling for help, we're here to help you. Huh. Get this done.
I like that.
Why did you pick that city, Pete?
It's the one that comes up all by itself. There's police codes and police codes for Walnut Creek in the Google search. So there it was. So when I have to use that one.
Where I grew up.
Is that right?
Risk of doxing myself.
I still have family there, right on Walnut Avenue. They bought their home for a really low price in the 1960s, and it's worth a little more today.
About the same thing in the 70s, but yeah.
Wow. Yeah,
it's worth a little more now.
I had no idea that you guys both had like ties to that very specific area. Interesting.
That's funny.
You're right. Yeah, you both did just dox yourselves. That's okay. We do it every week here on the show.
One more thing about the opening quick tip. If you are going to broadcast that SSID, I used to have a little fun with it. I put a political statement on mine, and then the password was "I agree."
That's about the closest to politics we get on this show. So yeah, there you go.
So no longer is that the case. I don't have that, but you know.
I have a non-political question, since Dave said it was National Pastry Day and now I want a pastry.
Yeah.
Do you guys have a favorite pastry?
I kind of do. It's going to surprise you potentially. It is a Dunkin' Donuts coffee roll. I love me a Dunkin' Donuts coffee roll. It is, it's definitely a guilty pleasure. Although I really don't feel all that guilty eating it, but, you know, it's fine. Yeah.
About you, Pete?
I don't need any right now. What's my, you know what I like is that pan au chocolat, those chocolate croissants.
Oh, yeah.
Like clear things. Yeah. No, the croissant things. Yeah. Whatever those are called. I have a question. Does a muffin count as a pastry? Is that a pastry?
Oh, that now we're asking existential questions. Would a muffin be yours, Adam?
I love a good blueberry muffin, but I don't know if that counts as a pastry. Outside of that, I don't think I'm a huge pastry person. If that doesn't count, because I'd probably just go with a really good croissant.
Okay,
croissant. That's definitely a pastry, right?
Yeah, I would think.
But just a plain one. I don't like all the gunk on those things.
Right. So. Right. That makes sense. All right. Well, you can let us know at feedback@macgeekab.com if a muffin is a pastry or any other questions or tips you might have. It's good for anything. So,
where was that? feedback@macgeekab.com?
That's what I heard, Pete. feedback@macgeekab.com.
I'm hearing some kind of percolation.
I'm just
going
to have to mute myself. I'm right below a drain pipe, and apparently someone decided to start taking a shower. So I'll mute when I'm not talking. How does that work?
I like it.
Welcome to a basement studio.
I want to congratulate Bart Pfeffer. I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, Bart. And if I'm not, my apologies, for winning our OWC giveaway last month in November. Woohoo! Congratulations, Bart. And this month's giveaway is copies of Marked 2 from our friend Brett Terpstra. So, check that out at MacGeekab.com/giveaway. And with that, I think it's time to go back to quick tips. Pete, you got one for us to bring us back into the fold here?
I do. I was racking my brain, going crazy, and it's right there in front. It's one of those things that you just should know. So here's one to learn, folks. Just know this. If you need to type to Siri on your Mac, iMac, laptop, Mac Mini, what have you, just tap the command button twice, and it should come right up, and you can type right into Siri. Because I was looking all over for it. I forget how I finally found it, but that's my quick tip. If you need to type to Siri, hit the command button twice, and you should be in business.
Nice. I like it.
Cool.
I just have to laugh about the we will stop calling attention to it probably once it stops happening, but maybe sooner. All right, you want to take us to the next one, Adam? What's that, Adam?
I blame it on the rain.
Who'll stop the rain, though?
Troy has a tip for us, and I'm gonna edit this a little bit because it says control panel, but I think this is something different. Hey, do you use the screen mirroring button in the control center on your Mac regularly? Or maybe the focus mode or anything else in Control Center. You can easily put these into your menu bar. Just open up Control Center and drag them into the menu bar where you want them. If you change your mind or just want them available while you're doing something like a presentation and want them out of the menu bar, no problem. Hold the command key down and click and drag them out of the menu or the menu bar.
Yeah.
Thanks for all you guys do. You rock. Well, thank you, Troy, for the tip.
I clearly had forgotten that one. I have done it, though, because I have my focus mode in the menu bar here on the iMac in the studio. And I'm always frustrated on my Mac Mini in the office because I can't find it. And now, as soon as I read Troy's tip, I was like, oh, I know why I can't find it. I never put it there. So it's there now. Yeah.
Yeah, it's handy.
It is handy. Yeah, for sure. You want to take us to Bill, Pete? Pete's going
to
be muted.
I can do so at this time. You have to hit the mute button before you switch off that page to actually read the quick tip. But
that's true.
Learned another new thing. Well, that's an old thing. Bill writes in, I was using Pages tonight and I went to save a document using the save as command. The last time I tried it, I had to press the option key so the file duplicate command would change to file save as. No more. In Pages, Numbers, and Keynote, the save as command is now always present above the duplicate command. Apple finally surrendered to common sense. So we take a fish shake away from Apple for this one.
That's true. Yeah, that's a negative fish shake. I like it.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's good.
Jazz hands.
Jazz hands. You got another one for us, Pete?
Oh, I do, actually. A quick problem that I had, no matter what I did, the only way you could text me and I would get the notification that you had texted me was to either turn off Bluetooth or disconnect my Apple Watch. Because if my Apple Watch was connected, I'd get a little tap, you know, that little haptic tap.
Yeah.
And that was the only notice that I got. Well, if you're out moving around, you may not feel that. I was getting hours later finding messages on what's going on. So I called Apple support. They tried to tell me, well, you know, if you you don't want people to be able to see your notifications if you leave your phone on your desk and walk in. I'm like, no, this isn't right. So I reinstalled the operating system. That's what I was all leading up to with this. I really reinstalled iOS on my phone. But I'm like, well, how do I do this? You know, what's it?
That was going to be my question, is how did you reinstall iOS on your phone?
So you plug your phone into, in my case, my MacBook Pro. And when you used to do it, it went up into iTunes, and that's how you back. Well, that's been gone for years. I haven't plugged my phone into my laptop for a decade or more.
Yeah.
Sync it. You plug it in, it shows up right there in the sidebar of Finder, and there's a beautiful interface to do all kinds of really cool stuff with your phone, including creating a backup, which now will load much faster than one over iCloud.
Huh.
Yep.
You're right.
I had no idea.
Yeah. If you had, I mean, now that you say it, it makes sense. But if you had asked me, well, I mean, clearly I asked you, wait, how do you do that? Yeah.
Yeah.
Huh. It's also how you sync podcasts to your 40 gigabyte iPod.
Well, that is true. Do you still sync podcasts to your 40 gigabyte iPod, Adam?
I didn't, but I gave my old 40 gigabyte iPod to my daughter and she started using it. She worked at a job where she wasn't allowed to have her phone or other devices. She couldn't have a device with a camera for security reasons because it was a HIPAA thing. And so she needed something to listen to music. And so it's like, here you go.
But 40 gigabytes, I mean, who would ever need more than, say, 5 gigabytes? Yeah. What a waste.
What a waste. That's right. Yeah,
I had 35 gigabyte one, but it died. And then you couldn't get replacement drives back in the day. Now you can now, or you could for a while. I don't know if you still can get those weird, the little tiny, I forget what, I can't even remember. It's a 1.8 inch hard drive, I think, that Apple had in the original.
Yeah, iPod. Right. It was smaller than, right. I forgot about that.
It was a spinning drive, 1.8 inch spinning drive.
You could feel it. You could feel the centrifugal force if you...
Yep.
But point is that your iPods will still work with your current Mac and you can still sync them and sync photos to them. And you just do it in the Finder. Just like Pete said, you just,
beautiful.
If you can find a cable.
Yeah. Right. Right. Yeah. Good luck. Yeah. I still have some 30 pin cables here.
I have one left. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
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 Because who knows when we'll need it.
It's a testament to Apple really that like, those old iPods will still connect and still sync. And
that is fantastic.
My son uses them. He does it a little bit now, but he used to be essentially a counselor at a summer camp. And they had a no phones rule and a very limited technology allowance, even like for the campers. Obviously he could have his phone and all that stuff, but so he would load up all our old iPods with music that he wanted to play on like a Bluetooth speaker at camp so that he wasn't using his phone to play music. So
so I got my little shuffle here.
Oh yeah, the nice little the little button shuffle. Yeah,
it's just a desk ornament. The problem with this one is I do not have one of the little docks that you need for this.
Oh,
because these would plug in through the headphone jack. There's no
I thought that 30-pin cable worked on those. No. It doesn't.
That's what that thing is. I have one of those.
Do you have
docks.
One of those?
Yeah. I don't know where it is, but I remember seeing it recently being like, what the heck is this again? Like, if I can find it, I'll ship it to you. Yeah.
Okay, cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah. You want to take us to our final quick tip here? For the week, anyway.
Absolutely. Final for this week. This is Kurt. Kurt says, see specific forecasts of temperature and precipitation in iPhone weather app. Hey, perhaps you might not have noticed when your cursor enters the graph of today's predicted temperature or precipitation in the Mac version of the weather app, you get a vertical line with a readout of the value of temperature or percentage precipitation. But did you know that you can get the same functionality in iOS or the iPadOS version of the weather app? Just tap the day you're interested in within the list of upcoming days to get the graphs, then put your finger down and hold it in the graph area. Now, as you slide your finger back and forth, you'll get that line and readout. I find this really helpful, especially in the hourly precipitation amounts graph, to find out when the rain is going to really when the rain is really going to get serious, rather. For me, it would be snow, but yeah.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's doing it now as you were saying it, like, it makes perfect sense and it works. I don't think I ever knew that was there, though. So, yeah.
Cool.
Pete, that shower's still going, huh? You got that?
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah.
That's all right.
It's not a shower. It's my water softener decided to cycle.
If I put my finger on Pete and press and scroll, will I get the precipitation amount?
All right. Quick question, folks. Do your end users always, and I mean always without exception, work on company-owned devices and IT-approved apps? I know the answer. Of course not. There's always at least that one person logging in from their cousin's ancient gaming PC or a coffee shop Wi-Fi name definitely not hacked. That's where our sponsor, 1Password Extended Access Management, comes in. It's the ultimate solution for securing every app, every device, and every user, no matter how creative their login habits might be. From contractors to unmanaged devices, 1Password makes sure your data stays locked down tighter than a vault guarded by laser sharks. It's not just about passwords, though. It's about visibility, control, and peace of mind in today's anything-goes tech landscape. Don't get caught letting your security rely on, trust me, it's safe. Visit 1Password.com/MGG to secure your shortcuts, detours, and everything in between. Check it out. Again, 1Password.com/MGG. That's 1Password.com/MGG. And our thanks to 1Password Extended Access Management for sponsoring this episode. Listen, you all know that I rely on BBEdit every single day, right? It's my secret weapon for crafting our show notes, comparing text, counting words, replacing text, and yes, of course, even for coding, which I do actually do sometimes. BBEdit doesn't just handle text, it masters it. It's like I get to have a Swiss Army knife, but for words. And one of the blades is inexplicably a laser. One feature I've been loving? The cheat sheets. Whether it's markdown tips, shortcuts, or your personal notes, they're right there at your fingertips. It's like BBEdit whispers, hey, don't get caught Googling basic commands during a live recording. Yeah. That's good advice, actually. And with ChatGPT worksheets, you can interact with AI directly in BBEdit, generate content, debug code, or even ask it which pizza topping reigns supreme. I mean, why not? Like, spoiler, it's mushrooms, obviously, AI confirmed. BBEdit is packed with tools to supercharge your productivity. Don't get caught with an editor that only scratches the surface. Head to barebones.com and try BBEdit for yourself today. They've got a great trial period. Your text and mine deserves BBEdit. Go try it out. You're going to love it. And our thanks to BBEdit and Barebones for sponsoring this episode. All right. I had a conversation with new listener Allison the other day, and from Podfeet. So go check out NoCellaCast too. And she pointed out something. It related to a conversation we had in episode 1066 about shared family passwords and in iCloud specifically and all that. And she said, remember that any password that you have stored in Apple Passwords and then shared with family or anyone else is only protected by the strength of the worst password of a passcode of a phone that anyone in your family owns, right? So if somebody uses, 9999 as their phone's passcode, well, now that's the barrier to entry. Of course, getting the getting that person's phone is also required to get in. But the point was well taken that, like, in Allison's example was maybe store your Hulu and Disney Plus passwords there for family, but don't store your bank or health information, at least not shared. And zooming out a little bit, this, of course, is true with any shared password database. The person with the least effective security is the hole into all of those shared passwords. So it's a good reminder because, like, you know, my wife and I do share bank passwords in a vault that's just for the two of us in 1Password. And it's like, okay, yeah, I trust that her password's probably better than mine, to be quite candid. But, you know, so it's just good to remember. So, you know, as we start our Don't Get Caught segment for today, I figured that was a good way to get ourselves into it. So. Yavel.
Very good. Very good.
You taking us to Kiwi Graham?
Adam? Yeah, we've got that. If I can get to my proper place. Now, I was trying to look up some because related to Kiwi Graham's Don't Get Caught. Kiwi Graham says, just a PSA for those of us who like the Space Lens feature in Clean My Mac X, I think that's how it was, that the new version that is now just called Clean My Mac version 5 with its fancy new UI does not have the Space Lens feature where you can visualize what is using your disk space. Wow, that's good to know, because that feature is a feature I love. He said, I spent 20 minutes searching for the feature one day and finally caved in to contacting MacPaw support. They provide 24-hour chat. Yeah, they're a great company. We like them a lot. And they responded with a bit of copy-paste text saying that Space Lens is now on the future development list. I couldn't find any support article that had those specifics. Although you can still download Clean My Mac 10, I don't think this fits in within a Set App subscription. I reverted to using Daisy Disk, which it should be noted when running the free trial does not provide the hidden space and run as admin features. Yeah, I did not know that Clean My Mac had updated. And of course, I have it through setup and it updated itself. So I got caught with this one, too.
It drove me crazy. I was trying to help my daughter while she was home update her computer. And we needed to clean some stuff off. And I'm like, oh, she's got a setup subscription on there. So we'll just download Clean My Mac. And I spent, like, you know, 10, 15 minutes hunting for Space Lens. I'm like, how could this feature not be here anymore? It makes no sense to me.
It's gone.
It's the feature that I use the most in Clean My Mac. So yeah, but I went and used Daisy Disk, obviously, because I gotta use something.
Yep. So. There you go. Daisy Disk is good stuff. Been using it for years.
Yeah.
I did like Space Lens. I mean, that was kind of cool.
Yeah. But hopefully it's coming back. That I did not know. So I was glad to see that they at least are saying that it's on the development list. So, yeah.
I want to know. So what I was wondering is if there was some sort of UI revolution going on there over in the Ukraine for some reason. Because, like, they totally went outside the box with this new UI. It's, like, all pretty and blah, blah, blah. And that's exactly what happened to my Spark Mail app, right? We talked about this.
Like, yeah, right.
They went totally non-standard on the UI. I think Clean My Mac was always kind of a little bit non-standard anyway. But, like, is there something happening over there where they're just, like, rejecting, like, standard UIs and just, we're going to do our own thing? Like, there's a artistic revolution or something. I don't know.
It is pretty, but, man, I'm thinking it's got to be taking some overhead resources, although it's minimal by today's standards anymore, but
yeah.
Well, I'll give them. It's pretty.
Yeah.
Pretty
yeah.
colors.
Yeah. That's interesting. Yeah. I don't find the new Clean My Mac as functional. Well, I mean, it objectively is less functional. It doesn't have a feature, but yeah, well, hopefully it'll come back, but Daisy Disk is great. So there's always alternatives. Competition. Woohoo. Love that.
Okay, should I take us to Andrew?
Yes, please.
Andrew kind of got caught. He nuked and paved his machine and noticed that it took out his web applications. And so he just moved them back to where they needed to be, and they didn't work. And he's wondering why. Basically, the web apps that you create in Safari are tied to the system's config files and settings. So just copying them back into the /applications is not going to automatically make them work. So the quick and easy way to do that is to grab your previous ones so you know exactly what they're named. Then you open Safari and go to each website you want to restore as a web app. If you don't know what a web app is, let me give you a quick, easy one to do. Go to D as in Delta, R as in Romeo, calculators.com, drcalculators.com. Bazillion financial calculators there. Go to one of those and then go to, then open your Safari menu bar and go to File and Add to Dock. And that calculator will now become a web app for you. So that's how, that's what, how web apps work. There's your cool stuff found buried in there today.
It is it is singular. Dr. Calculator.
DR Calculator.
Not calculators.
Oh, just wanted to give it right.
Yep. Yeah, we'll have the right link. We'll have the right link in the show notes. Yeah, yeah. Yep.
And so anyway, assign the same name. Go to your old web app page, assign the same name to it, and then click Add to Dock. Then go into your /applications folder.
/applications is your applications folder in your home folder for people.
Yes.
Just to translate that. Yep.
Yeah, not your applications folder. Not to confuse the two, although it could easily be done. So then delete all your old web apps from there. Then drag the ones off your dock into there, because that's how you get the new ones into that applications folder. And then drag them back to the dock if you want them on the dock. So they'll be there for you, but to get to them if you want them on the dock. So you got to delete the old ones, else when you try to drag the new ones in there, it's going to say, hey, one already exists. What do you want to do? That just gets rid of your confusion right then and there like that. So I hope that helps, Andrew. I love web apps.
I used to love web apps. Well, Mac OS 15 broke them for, certainly for me. Because I create web apps for Google Docs, and because of the way we talked about this in a previous episode, because of the way the scopes work, now every Google Doc that I try to open goes into a web
app. Back to Google.
Yeah. So I'm looking at both Unite and Confluence from BZG apps to solve that, but I'm not quite there yet. But
I want to mention, because I do this at work, since you guys mentioned the applications folder in your home folder, I use that on my work computer because we do not have admin access to our machines. And so a lot of apps I can install into my home folder, the way our permissions are set up, I don't know if this would work for everybody, and they will just run because they're running under my user account, not under the main account. So depending upon the app, I don't think all apps will work like that. But a lot of apps do. That's actually how, I have set up on there, and all of those just install, under your user account. So if you have a locked down Mac where you don't have admin permissions, you can sometimes run apps from that user folder, just, drag them in there instead of the main applications folder, and they'll run under your user account permissions.
Yep. Smart. I never thought of that sort of hack workaround. That's a great idea. Yeah. It's good. You want to take
one from Gary? Yeah, he has kind of a don't get caught PSA. I actually saw this news article and I think I misunderstood it, so I'm glad Gary brought this one up. It is that the FBI is warning iPhone and Android users to stop sending texts. U.S. officials urge citizens to use encrypted messaging. I'm assuming encrypted messaging apps and calls whenever they can. So I think this is related to, you guys told me, and I didn't realize this, to SMS and now RCS, which I think we have support for now, finally.
Sort of.
On our iPhones, kind of.
Some of us do. Yeah, it's RCS support is based on the carrier, and many carriers have turned it on. Some have not, Mint Mobile being one who, they have to... In order for RCS to work the right way, it has to be fundamentally ingrained in the carrier's system. And a lot of carriers had chosen not to do that because you could sort of work around with an app on an Android phone that did the RCS-ish kind of stuff without it actually being RCS. The issue, as you're pointing out here, is that neither SMS nor RCS are encrypted at their core. Google's implementation of RCS is encrypted.
But that's why I was confused.
Correct. Yeah. The implementation between like Google phone to Google phone using RCS with an app is encrypted most of the time, as long as you're using the right app that's doing it. But if you're just using RCS through the carrier, which is what iPhones do, that is not encrypted. Apple's talked about we need to add encryption to RCS, yada, yada, yada. I think if this keeps up and the FBI and various lettered agencies start start saying don't use this. I think WhatsApp is probably going to become the default here in the US like it is everywhere else in the world. Most everywhere else.
Yeah. Does Microsoft own WhatsApp though?
Is that Facebook?
Facebook, that's right.
Or Meta. Okay. Yeah. Meta owns WhatsApp. Meta.
Okay. Yeah. I knew somebody bought it, but that was my question to you. You pre-answered it. What do you think will become the default? Will it be WhatsApp? And since the rest of the world's using it, I bet you're right.
Yeah.
There's Signal.
Telegram.
And Telegram.
I've used Telegram.
Yep.
Yeah. Yep. Interestingly, though, things like WhatsApp, great for messaging in the United Arab Emirates, but no phone calls allowed.
Oh, interesting.
You cannot make a voice call in the UAE with WhatsApp. They blocked it.
Huh. They can't hear you if you do that.
Encrypted texts are okay, and encrypted conversations not so much.
Yeah. Yeah, my guess is it will be WhatsApp. We are the sort of one of the major countries that's a holdout on this. And it's not like it's a policy. It's just the way things evolved here. We use SMS, RCS now, hopefully. And, iMessage is what our defaults are here. But when my son was over at Reed, all the kids, he never used iMessage to communicate with anyone on campus. Everyone used WhatsApp. It just was the
on-campus
default.
It was easier
default.
To create groups and things like that, yeah. Right? Is that
correct? Yeah,
that would be my
and a lot of international summation. Students too. Like
sure.
It was both. But yes, the groups and all of that. He's like, oh yeah, WhatsApp was the. I mean, as soon as you walked on Reed's campus, done. And my daughter in Italy, she's like the only people I use iMessage to communicate with are you guys. So it's like, yeah, makes sense.
Doesn't it also? Does WhatsApp also have the self-destruct message thing too? Like, I think that's a thing.
I don't know.
Oh, I don't recall.
Do they have that feature, or am I thinking of something else?
I'll look that up while you guys are going
okay.
in.
Okay. Yeah.
Next.
Yeah, so let us know what do you currently use for cross-platform messaging? Like, if you're in a group with Android people, are you just using SMS or RCS, whatever kind of works? Or are you intentionally going somewhere else, like WhatsApp or Signal or Telegram or Slack or any of those tools too? So I'd be curious. Feedback at MacGeekGab.com. Be good. On that front, Doug also reminds us that he almost got caught during the Thanksgiving holidays as I visited several people who are on one of my group chats. While there, I decided to rename the group chat, and to my surprise, the name of the group chat changed on everyone's devices, not just mine. He says, I would have thought that naming the group chat is a personal setting and should not impact the other group members. He says, I was about to change the name of several of my other group chats with names that would have been very embarrassing when the other group chat members saw the name. Yeah, don't get caught. It is. And that... Now, with whatever they're doing in iOS 18, the group chats that I have with Android people, even just SMS group chats, are able to be named, and the Android folks see them. And I put an image in, and they see that too. So, yeah, but it is a widespread It is for everyone in the group. It is one name.
And I think anyone in the group can change it, right? It's not locked down to the person who created or started the group or anything like that. Yeah.
Yeah, no, if you're in the group, you can change the name. Yeah. Yes.
Nice.
Yes.
Okay. Well, and while you were talking about that, I was able to look it up. Yes, WhatsApp does have an auto-destruct message option called Disappearing Messages. Open the chat, tap the contact's name or the three dots to the right, select Disappearing Messages, and tap Continue. And I'm sorry, my water softener is getting louder, so I'm going to ride that mute button hard.
Yep. It's all good. I will take us to Cool Stuff Found. Randy Walker in our Discord brings us a timely one called at festivitas.app. Of course, everything's linked in the show notes at macgeekab.com. And this adds Christmas lights that dangle off of your Mac's menu bar and your dock. So fun stuff. It's available for... I think it's you choose what you want to pay. They suggest that you pay, €4 for it. But I think you can choose to pay more, all of that good stuff. So yes, Festivitas from Simon Stovering. So, fun stuff.
Everybody's getting into the spirit. Here's a side one. Did you know Tesla does that too? You can set your Christmas so that when you turn on your turn signal, you hear jingle bells from the, sleigh bells and that kind of stuff. Though.
Sure.
Why not?
I don't have a Tesla. I have a friend who does. And I saw that. I was like, oh, that's pretty cool.
That's cool. Yeah, that's cool.
Very, very cool. Porthos John has one for us. He says, I happen to be an au naturel kind of guy with my iPhone.
GMI.
Me too. I go caseless.
Yes. You are naked and unafraid, Adam.
Naked. Yeah, we talked about this. That's right. But he says, but I just ordered this new case, which isn't really a case. I think they've been around for a little while, but I'm getting one now, and they seem to be well built for what they are with fairly decent protection. And it is the Arc case. And I'm trying to remember what this one looks like.
It's the Arc Pulse.
Pulse. Yes,
yeah, I've got it up for people watching. I guess the best way I would describe it is it's kind of like a thong for your iPhone. I don't know. It covers
again TMI.
It covers.
It is the one that I thought.
Yeah, it covers the top. It covers all four corners. But it's like, it's almost maybe like a sling is better. And I'm really sorry that I said thong first, because now I know what images you have in your heads. But that's what this thing is for your phone. It just sort of fits over.
Protects the camera lenses.
Yeah, fits and the edges too. The four corners are protected. Yeah.
The corner protection style case. And it looks like it's metal, right? Is it actually metal?
Yeah, I think there's metal ones or rubber ones based on what I'm seeing here. So, yeah.
It's got like a shock absorber layer, I think, between the metal and the, right?
Yes. Yeah. So, it looks like it's got
there's like a little rubberized or gel thing. And then,
they call it essentialist design. That's pretty cool. How much are these things? I'm looking here. Let's say I have an iPhone 16. How much is this? It's going to be $60 or $70, depending on whether I want the rubber or the...
Or matte black or silver.
Oh, man. Less material, more money. Ow.
Silver's sold out. They have different colors, too, to match.
No.
You can just view it
with
your phone.
You can view it with your phone's color.
And they have pro and non-pro versions.
Yes. Yes, for sure. Well, because the phones are all different sizes now. So,
different cameras and
different colors. So, yeah. Although the colors of the case are, you can, for a 16 Pro, you can get gold and bronze and black and silver.
Black.
And, yeah.
For a cool 110 Benjamins or Georges.
Or for $300, you can get one in titanium onyx black. So, yeah.
Woo.
You got it. Yup.
That's like
Christmas gift.
Yep. That's the big one.
So do you get a base? Can you get a base level Apple Watch for around $300, $350 these days?
Yeah.
So you can either get an Apple Watch to go with your phone or you know, a case.
Nice. Sure. Why not? Yep. Elliot tells us about an app called Launcher. He says, I accidentally discovered that with this, I now have a quick launch toolbar on my iPhone's lock screen in addition to all my other icons. And he says, this is a done by Launcher putting a live activity up. So they're using the live activity functionality of iOS to give you interactive buttons. And one of them, those buttons can be your apps to launch, which is pretty darn cool. And that's right there on the lock screen. It's clever. Yes. Clever is the right word. Yeah. I think I have Launcher somewhere. I've had it in the past, so I gotta check that out, because that seems interesting. Instead of just having the two buttons that Apple gives us, we get, you know, more. So,
cool.
Yeah, nice find, Elliot. I like it. From Cromulent Labs. And of course, there's always links in the show notes. And if you go to MacGeekGab.com and sign up for the email newsletter that we send out, it's really your emailed show notes every week. So we take the everything that's in the show notes and we just deliver it to your inbox, so you don't even have to come to the website and seek it out. We will bring it to you. So, yeah. This one has made the rounds. Bruce certainly wasn't the only person to send this in. It's called Mist, and it is the macOS installer super tool. It is a utility that will automatically download firmware and installers for your Mac, and it just takes the guesswork and the hunting work out of finding the links to, you know, any version of macOS that's available for download. And you can even filter it by what is installable on the current machine that you're running on. So, fun stuff. And then there is also a Mist, M-I-S-T, command line tool that will do that from the terminal if you'd rather do it from the terminal instead of from a GUI. So you can, it's free. You can install it with Homebrew or you can just download the binary directly. So
yeah. Nice.
Yeah, it's nice. Yeah. You taking us to expenses, or are we just gonna listen to Pete's toilet run? I know it's not a toilet. I just
it sounds like one.
Totally.
It's exactly what it sounds like.
Yes.
Because it's one of those J drains, and I'm sorry, everybody. Thank you for your patience this week.
It's fun. I mean, what we're having fun with it. I think it's great.
Is that a toilet? What is it?
Sorry, Pete. Bob does have a thing for us and kind of for me, because he says, hey, Adam, I don't have a Vision Pro. It's because I'm the only one on this panel with a Vision Pro. But I use an app called Expenses Spending Tracker by Blue Comet Labs. It's a very good basic checkbook type app that runs on iOS, Mac, and also works on Vision Pro. It has a very limited trial version, but a non-subscription one-time purchase of $10 that works on all these platforms. The app syncs beautifully across my devices in iCloud. It's super easy to use. I only had an issue getting CSV data from another app to import. I contacted the developer and was amazed at the quick and thorough response. One day, I never got the CVS import to work, but I'm pretty sure that his response would have helped, I'm assuming, if I was more of a geek. I don't know if this would be any value to you, but for some reason, I felt compelled to let you know. Well, I appreciate it, Bob. I think I have heard of this and seen this app before. I've never personally tried it out, but be worth maybe even just checking out to see how it works on the Vision Pro. So thank you.
It appears to be in setup, Adam.
Even better.
Yeah. So, I don't know if like the Vision Pro version is available with setup. I don't know.
If there is a setup for the Vision Pro.
Well, yeah, I've found like there are apps you can install on your iPhone that are in setup. And the way
Correct.
It works is you install the app and then you use setup on your Mac to like enable your account, and then you log into your account, and that's how you get access to it. I use that with the Is it Headspace? Is that the app that... No, Headspace is the meditation
app.
That's
the meditation app,
yeah. What's the other one that, that summarizes book... Headway summarizes books for me. I love it. It's great. And they've got a CarPlay thing where it'll read it to me in the car. So that's a bonus cool stuff found is Headway. I'm loving that. So,
very cool.
Yeah. Anyway, so I'll share that. That's that. Yeah, I think that's Headway, makeheadway.com. So, and it will be in the show notes. I promise. Let's see. Where are we next? RN Doug in Discord tells us about a very cool deal that's happening that we just didn't want to miss, that we didn't want you to miss out on. And that is that my favorite PDF editor, PDF expert, is right now available on Stack Social, has a lifetime license at $79.99, along with a holiday 20 coupon code for another 20% off. So,
Yeah, that plays into the conversation we had either last episode or the episode before about PDF pen, right? And alternatives since that kind of went upscale. So,
Hang on, Pete's going to talk.
If you missed this sale and you have access to a .edu email, it's a 50% off their normally $129 lifetime license.
I like so,
that. Yeah, so for... So for 65, no, 139, it's $70, what it comes down to. So okay. I think it's, $139.99. Yeah. So $70 for a .edu if you miss this holiday discount. But I'd go grab that because you don't need a .edu to get this discount.
Oh, it's true. It's true. Good stuff. And the last thing that I have in our cool stuff found is something, again, that Bruce and many others have sent in. And that is the iCloud Passwords extension for Firefox. And it is by Apple Inc. So this is not some third party hacked in. It's first party hacked in. No, it's a Firefox extension from Apple so that you can use your iCloud passwords on that browser, which I think is great. I am very tempted to migrate myself to Apple Passwords, but I don't know. It feels like a big move. Maybe it's not.
I think it is just because there's so many other things that 1Password still does that Passwords does not yet. For instance, I store all the IDs with pictures of our driver's licenses and passports and that sort of stuff in 1Password. If you can do it in Passwords, I'm not aware of it yet.
You could do it in Notes, though, and make it an encrypted secure note. So there are, I've had the same thought. Like, there are workarounds. I'm not sure how I feel about having my passwords locked into Apple's ecosystem. But of course, as I say that, I think that's only because...
Yeah, because Dave, I know you want to get away from Apple someday.
Right. Well, right.
You're but, working that way.
but I think it's a false friction in my head, right? Because and I think the reason for it is I started with my passwords not in Apple's ecosystem, because Apple didn't have a functionality for that, right? So it was 1Password. They were the only game in town, or at least, the first ones that really did it.
And then the only secure game in town for a while.
And then the only secure game, right. So, I think I'm overthinking it. So the next time I have free time, maybe I'll migrate my passwords over to Apple Passwords.
Yeah, you've got that scheduled for 2026, I'm sure.
Hmm.
I had to just check because I wasn't sure if it did one-time passcodes, but it looks like it does. So that's a key feature for me. It has to have that password manager these days. It also, of course, looks like it supports passkeys. Oh, I know it supports passkeys. Obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, it's interesting. I need to really think through all the devices that I would want that on, and am I limiting myself? Like, do I use my passwords on the old iPads that I use for gigs that don't have Apple passwords because they can't run latest versions of iPad OS, and I do use 1Password on those. How often does that even come up? Is it relevant? These are the things I just need to.
Well, and you're going to have your phone with you if you need that password.
Exactly.
Right? So
exactly. Yeah. I just need to. I will start today. I am committing to start today to be aware of where I'm using passwords, and could Apple Passwords work just as well here? If so, maybe by the time my 1Password subscription in July comes around, maybe I won't renew the family subscription there. I don't know. I probably will. It's just, let's just be honest about that. It's my security blanket, guys. So.
Same.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. We've got time.
Time for some questions.
Yeah. We blew through all that stuff. I'm proud of us. Look at us go. I think you know what it is, Adam? It's that Pete keeps muting himself, so we're not getting off track.
Maybe. There you go. Sand, now it comes out.
What's interesting is the way the gating and noise processing and all that stuff works. When you're talking, Pete, it's there, but it is less present than when you are not talking but unmuted. It's because there's like some compression, and so it brings up that low level, whereas otherwise it's really not as loud as it actually sounds when you're not talking. So yeah. Anyway, we could tune the compression to fix that by we would tune the noise gate / expander to raise its level, and then that wouldn't feed the compressor your data, which would then bring the level up. So
yeah, and I needed a Phillips screwdriver to turn the process off, and I just don't happen to have one here in the basement. It's up in the garage, and I tried to get it during the ad, but it just mute's just easier to ride today. Sorry.
That's it. That's all right. It's all good. It's all good. It makes it fun. Randy Walker asks, is there a way to sync mail accounts and settings across macOS, iOS, iPadOS, so I don't have to type the same IMAP and SMTP settings multiple times for each device? Adam, do you have any thoughts on? I have thoughts on this, but I'm happy to defer.
Syncing mail for any device.
He's asking about his Apple
mail
app? Specifically.
Sorry, what
right?
was the mail app?
Well, that's
is he using
it.
Mail?
Apple Mail. Can he sync his settings so that he puts them in on his Mac once, and then they just work on his iPhone and iPad and all that good stuff?
I mean, yeah. am I losing the track here? I use iCloud syncing for that, yeah. Which I think syncs everything.
I have used that too. Yeah, if you go to System Settings, your name, iCloud, and then enable Mail there for syncing. I think that's what does it. It might. Is it in iCloud Drive? I can't remember which switch it is because I don't want to turn it off.
Right. No, it's. I'm pretty sure it's in mail settings, but I'm just wondering does it do something weird that I don't remember? I mean, I just have all my mail accounts set up on all my devices, so it did it so long ago that I don't remember if there was any trick or like. I think it just works. I think you just turn it on and it should just sync everything.
Yeah. But
I don't want to be misremembering, I guess is my thing.
No, and it would appear in settings internet accounts, at least on the Mac, right? That's where that shows up.
Correct.
Yep.
Yeah.
What I will say though is if you go into settings iCloud, there is an iCloud mail setting. That one you don't need to have on. That's whether your iCloud mail account itself is enabled in mail. So if you're using something else and you're not using your iCloud mail, you can have that off. But if you go in to look at all of the apps using iCloud, that's where you want mail to be on, because that's the setting sync, not just enabling your iCloud mail account on that device. Does that make sense what I'm saying? I hope.
I think so. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. That's the trick there. So hopefully that helps. It is something that's doable, but I have seen it where I have all those things on and one account just doesn't sync. There doesn't seem to be a way to say, hey, you know, go try this again. So yeah. Yep. There it is. Kirshen asks another mail-related question. I'm not sure we'll have an answer, but we will try. My partner has an issue with macOS Mail on her M2 Mac Mini running macOS 15.1.1, so current as of the time that the note was sent. She receives a newsletter and has made the origin email address a VIP. An email from this address consequently shows up in the VIP smart mailbox. Okay. However, even when the current edition has been read, there's an indicated unread count on the badge kind of that mailbox for the newsletter. And she has searched in mail and did not find any newsletter messages which were unread. We've tried removing and re-adding VIP status for that origin email address on both her iPhone and Mac Mini. And still, the unread count of 2 shows up on her Mac when the newsletter email address is a VIP. Her iPhone does not show any unread count for the newsletter email erroneously. I've tried using Onyx for macOS 15 and ran the Onyx maintenance rebuilding spotlight index and mail's mailboxes, but that did not resolve the issue, and the unread count still shows on her Mac. Head-scratchingly yours, Kirshen. You got any thoughts, Adam?
I think that might be a stump head. The geek.
I've seen similar things with Apple Mail. I don't know that I've seen exactly this, right? But I've seen it where mails will badge a mailbox erroneously, and it's like, why is that there? And the first thing I do is I go in to the VIP, in this case it would be the VIP mailbox, and I do a select all, and I mark all as unread, and then mark all as read. So turn it off, turn it on again. Clearly, I think it's safe to assume that this is a problem with that instance of mail on that Mac. Like if you set up another user account and set it up the same way, I would assume that this problem wouldn't happen. There's just something in mail's database that ain't right.
Right. Yeah.
I would also – Onyx's default when cleaning things up is to rebuild – the mailboxes in mail. And that's fine. However, there is an alternative option in Onyx to delete the existing index. And what that will do is let mail itself rebuild them from scratch, including the database files themselves. So in this case, if the select all, unread red thing doesn't do it, I would try deleting the index just because, it's not going to hurt. And then the other place I would look is contacts. Contacts is weird. I always notice no matter how fast my Mac is or how new it is, if I go make an edit to a contact that's synced to iCloud, my CPU core is like run at full tilt for a little while. It seems like it's way too ingrained in the system.
Like it's rewriting the whole thing or something.
And so I would go and look clearly in order to set it as a VIP. I'm assuming you've added it as a contact. I would look at that contact record, see if there's another email address attached to it. So it's not just that one email. Is there another email or something? And maybe delete that contact, then re-add it and then add it as a VIP. Maybe that's part of this. I don't know.
Does Apple Mail do anything specific when you force like a synchronize, like right click on a mailbox and then choose the synchronize option?
I think,
like, is that worth trying?
Isn't that called rebuild? Is there a synchronize option?
Yeah, when I right click on a mailbox, I get synchronize the mailbox name, take it offline. I can also edit it. And then there's the handy, get account info, which will show you how much storage is in each box and how many messages are in each box and all that stuff and how close to your quota limit stuff you are. I only just see synchronize. I don't know that they have a rebuild is under the mailbox.
I was going to say
the very bottom.
That's right. And rebuild on an IMAP mailbox. I don't know what it would do on the VIP mailbox. It might not even be an option, but on an IMAP mailbox, rebuild will wipe out the local copy and re-download the contents from the server. So,
oh yeah, the VIP. Yeah, I get a rebuild option under the menu for a VIP box.
Oh, well then that would, I like that option. That's something I would do. Yep.
You do not have the synchronize option with a VIP box though, but you do have a rebuild. So,
oh yeah, I would rebuild that right away. That might go to the top of my list. Nice find. Yeah. Interesting. Scott has a question also about mail.
Is it about mail?
It is.
It's a mail kind of day.
So mail's a problem here. Just delete mail and go to Thunderbird and you'll be fine.
I mean, you'll be different. I'm not sure. Different. You know,
there you go. Well, fair enough.
Yeah. As someone who's been living in Thunderbird and not mail for what, several years now, or well over a year, I would say, it's fine. It's fine. It's not.
You
trade one set of issues for another. It's fine.
Or you could delete your mail application and get a pen and paper and some stamps and use USPS.
That sounds great.
You can mark those as read.
So if you have a question for the show, put it in a self-address, put it in an envelope and put a self-addressed stamped envelope with your return address inside it and mail it to feedback@mattkeekup.com.
Write it on the back of a $100 bill, though.
That's so, right. You know. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. We take all requests on $100 bills. That's right.
On American currency.
Yeah. That's right. I don't know. I mean, I can exchange currency. It's really not that big of a deal. It's, you know, there's a cost involved, but you know, if it's a net positive, it's fine.
Right.
Oh, and on that tip too, if you're, you know, British Post, if appropriate, or Australian Post, or
yeah,
insert your favorite international postal system.
Here. You could even FedEx it to us. I don't know. Right? Just an idea.
Keep those cards and letters coming.
All right, but what's Scott dealing with?
Oh yeah, Scott. Sorry. Right. So Scott says, my 2020 Mac Mini M1 and iPhone 13 are up to date on their respective operating systems. However, when I execute a search in Mail, the yield of results on my Mac far exceeds those on my iPhone, and I'm curious as to why. Is it a syncing issue, an iCloud issue, or something completely different? Adam, you got thoughts on this?
Searching for mail yields different results on my Mac versus my iPhone. I think, correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I'm wrong. I thought search would only search locally. Will it actually go in an IMAP account and search like stuff that hasn't been like pulled down?
Yes, but, it does. Okay. On my iPhone, it will, and on my Mac as well. Yeah. I think that's a fair yes to say. Yeah.
Okay. So
but if they're sitting there next to each other, your phone and your Mac, and you pulled up the inbox, say for your main mail account, shouldn't they be the same?
And you'll that's Scott's point. So why are they different? Yeah. That's the only thing I can think of is like, is something's not synced where, you know, like your Mac is synced to the mail and your iPhone hasn't. So like either the data bit, the index or whatever doesn't have the same content. I'd be curious to know, like, I'm assuming the messages that he's looking there, if he just like went to that, wherever they were stored, whatever box they're in, and just checked them that they're both on both devices. Right.
Yep.
So you would think in theory, the same search would then find those messages. So no, man, this is a stumper for me. I'm not a huge, knock on wood. I get these kinds of questions all the time about all these mail issues. I don't often have these same mail issues that people, I don't know how I'm immune, but
I've seen this on my iPhone searching for stuff. And I think it's searching in mail on the iPhone is weird because it tries to help me too much.
Right.
I mean, you want to make sure that you're searching all mailboxes and not current mailbox, assuming that's what you want to do if you want to search your entirety of your mail store.
Fair,
but,
yeah.
It does say, like, I just searched for messages from Mint Mobile, right? And I've been with them for 4 years. In fact, they just sent me my, you know, 4 year Mintiversary note or whatever.
Nice.
That was. Yeah. I look and I've got several pages of email from them. I'm looking on my iPhone at the bottom. So, you know, and the oldest email, this is sorted by date. The oldest email that it's finding is from 2019. And it says, it said some results may not appear. Mail downloads and organizes messages when iPhone is locked, charging, and connected to Wi-Fi. Large accounts like this one might take longer. And when you heard me say, oh, what was happening is more messages were coming in. And I couldn't read the thing at the bottom because the list got longer. So it is, as I'm sitting here actively kind of parsing through whatever mailboxes on the server it hadn't yet parsed through. So I think that's part of this is,
yeah,
let it sit longer. Maybe I don't know. Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny because when searching for contacts and mail and all that stuff, I often default to just using on my iOS devices, the Spotlight search and not like the individual search within the app.
Interesting.
I don't know if it yields different results or what have you, but.
Oh, look at that. Oh, this is kind of a mess.
it is. I mean, you have to go in and manage. You can go in and turn on and off in your iOS settings, like things that it searches, tell. And if you leave it on defaults, it's worthless because there's just like too much.
There's so many things. So
I filtered down and then organized in order. You can also, I think, change the order from what I remember so that, you know, if you're often more searching for contacts or mail or you want the Safari items up higher and stuff like that, or you used to be able to do that. I don't know if you still can.
Right.
Since they redid some of the settings stuff, but.
Right. Right. Yep. Yep. Yeah.
Oh, well, and just Dave, I have to mention it just because you, and I think, I don't know if I mentioned this once before or not, but you mentioned Mint Mobile and I was in BJ's and their guy's standing there trying to sell, you know, new cell phone plans to you as you're walking by. Hi, can I ask you what carrier you have? Say, I got Mint Mobile. Oh, have a nice day.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They don't even try.
No.
It's like, oh, yeah, we can't beat that.
But, like, you know, Mint still hasn't added support for RCS, although maybe if the FBI keeps up their stuff, it won't matter. And also, you can't add an Apple Watch to a Mint plan. So if you have Mint for your phone, you will never have an Apple Watch on cellular.
Right.
Correct. So, yeah. So
You know, there are limitations.
That's why I have a Wi-Fi Apple Watch. Same. Yeah, there are limitations. Well, actually, I think the iPad as well. I don't think you can put an iPad on Mint Mobile cellular unless they've changed recently.
No, I think you're right.
Yeah,
but you could put your iPad on a different carrier and still have it as part of your iCloud ID with a watch. The only carrier you can put your watch on is the same carrier that the phone is paired to. And by the way, your watch, your Ultra is a cellular capable watch.
Oh, that's right. The Ultras are automatically that way. So
you just and then can't use that feature.
My workaround is I just tether a Wi-Fi iPad to my cellular and there you go. Now I've got a cellular iPad. So.
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Go ahead, Adam.
Remind me who the underlying carriers for Mint are. Is it still T-Mobile and AT&T?
It's T-Mobile.
It's T-Mobile. I mean,
pure T-Mobile.
Well, it will roam onto other carriers in those areas where it's necessary. And roaming is the wrong word because you don't have to turn on roaming to do it. But yes.
I ask because I'm kind of locked into Verizon here where I live because there is no other towers basically out here in the middle of nowhere in my town area
too. So
because I had T-Mobile and I loved them but when I moved here I had to switch and I also had AT&T at one point and still that was no good or from what I understand isn't great here either.
So there are.
It would be like Visible, I think.
Visible is would be one. Boom Mobile is another one that's kind of, you know, MVNO for Verizon. And if I forget who you have for your home internet, but if you have...
I have a local telco.
Got it. Okay. So. If you have Xfinity for your home internet, you can get Xfinity Mobile, which also is an MVNO of Verizon.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, you're right. Visible is kind of the one.
And I think they're owned by Verizon.
They are. It's just like Mint Mobile is now owned by T-Mobile, right?
They are. Right?
Yeah.
In fact, I get a bill that says your T-Mobile bill has been paid. Yeah. You know, when it comes up.
Yeah.
The other cool thing about that, and I think I told you everybody before, when I used to go to Hawaii, my Mint Mobile would work. When I would go to Alaska, it would not work. It wouldn't even roam. I couldn't get nothing. And I happened to land in Anchorage the day that T-Mobile officially took over Mint Mobile. Forgot, turned on my phone, and it worked. And I went, oh yeah, it's not supposed to work, but now it's working. So it works in Alaska now.
Nice.
When it didn't used to before. So that's one of the nice benefits of, yeah.
Yeah, there have been a couple of nice little benefits and no drawbacks yet that I've seen for the move, for the acquisition.
And I've actually found on my last two international trips, I just bit the bullet and bought the T-Mobile International Pass. And man, it was great. And I never used all the data. And the phone just worked as if I was home. So, yeah.
Nice. That's great.
A little more expensive, but not much than
getting an eSIM.
I forget the name of the device now that I was using on my little Wi-Fi device. So, it kicked off. Woohoo! Victory! Now we can end the show. My water softener stopped.
Nice. Nice. All right. I have one last thing, and I think we have time to talk through it.
Yep.
Yeah. This is fun.
So Father John wrote in. And I'll share Father John's question as verbatim as makes sense here. Hi, guys. A long time ago in a galaxy far, far, far away, I used Windows 98. Mea culpa. There was and still is a printer program called FinePrint. It would configure the printer to print out booklets. I just had to set it up once, and when I ran it, it asked for the file to print PDFs, TXR, DOC, whatever, and then TXT, I'm guessing that's what it was, but maybe TXR, it's a format I don't know. Anyway, it then printed in booklet form. I have searched for a way to do this on the Mac and have not been able to do it. I know I can create a booklet in Pages to print, but is there any way to print an existing multi-page PDF as a booklet? Please help. So this is one of those questions that would almost never make it to the show because it's so specific and not really relevant to most of us, right? Like printing booklets is a very specific thing and then also wanting to print them from a PDF. Like, this is a very, very niche thing. In fact, Father John, you might be the only listener that wants to do this. So it would never make it to the show, but we like to help. And so if I have an answer, if any of us have an answer, we will send it to you, via email or maybe now with the new policy via, smoke signals or snail mail or something. But
$100 bills.
$100 bills. There you go.
That's right.
However, I thought I don't have an answer for this. Like I don't do this because, as we've just pointed out, Father John is unique in this way. He's the only one in the Mac ECAP community that does it. Like, go with me, folks. Just bear with me. And so I thought, well, I could research this, or I could take Father John's message verbatim, paste it into ChatGPT, and see what it says. And sure enough, it says, you can absolutely print a multi-page PDF as a booklet. And it gave me several options. One was using free software, Adobe Acrobat Reader DC. When you choose file print there in the dialog, in the page sizing and handling, there is a booklet option, and there's even booklet subset options. There's another app called Cheap Imposter that is a Mac app designed for creating booklets. And then it acknowledges that the built-in tools in like Preview are limited functionality, but you could do two-sided printing and that whole thing and print a booklet that way. And then if you can virtualize Windows, you could still use FinePrint on that. So those are the options it came up with, which is much better than the options I could come up with because I don't know the answer. So it was just one of those things where ChatGPT can help. Now, I have not vetted any of those answers. It could be, I've said it before, ChatGPT is like Dunning-Kruger.
At your own risk.
Well, it's like Dunning-Kruger in software. It is strong and wrong. It'll be super confident until you tell it, I can't do that. It'll be like, of course you can't do that. That option doesn't exist. It's like, So I just wanted to share this as kind of a, you know, here's one thing that, that we can use these LLMs for. I was talking with a friend this week, and he says his favorite question to ask ChatGPT is, are you sure? And every time it says, you are smart to question my judgment. I have researched this and yada, 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 gone on. So now that's what the new model, the O1 model is supposed to do, is it's supposed to get an answer and then confirm that it's correct before it delivers it to you. It takes a little longer, and you have it with a ChatGPT account, you have limited like slots to use that. But it does kind of, in theory, go a step beyond. So.
ChatGPT will punk you in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. You got to confirm that what it's saying is correct. Absolutely. But, you know, it gives you a starting point, right? Okay, Acrobat Reader, cheap imposter. Okay, great. Now I know what to look at to see if it's going to do what I want to do. So
now, Dave, I did something weirder and more old school. I decided, because I don't do booklets at all either, and I said, I wonder what the App Store would say. So I just searched for booklets on the App Store, and there was an app called Create Booklet 2. It's $20 on the App Store. It has 164 ratings with a 4.6 star rating review. So again, I've never tried this. I just pulled it up in the Mac App Store.
Sure.
But it does have some good reviews. It looks like it would do what you want it to do. It also says Create Booklet has been the most used Mac booklet solution for the last 10 years.
Interesting.
So it sounds like it's been around for a while.
To the App Store instead of searching ChatGPT.
Well, and then my favorite part of their marketing thing too was, let me see if I can find it. Never created a booklet before? No problem. It will guide you through the process, help setting up your printer, and then it's a single click for your booklet. Nothing can go wrong, according to them.
Oh boy!
So I don't know. Maybe there is people out in our audience that have used this. If this has been around this long, you know, it's possible someone could vouch for this. So it looks. I mean, it looks nice.
Yeah,
it's the Mac App Store. What could go wrong?
Nothing can go
wrong.
Just
throw your $20 at it and see.
I mean, I think that's the title of the episode. Nothing can go wrong. I'm certain of that. Now, I was going to come up with a title that had something to do with Pete's water issues, and because I created an image for the title,
thank you. That, here we are.
That has one of the three nerds sort of suffering from toilet overload, even though, of course, your problem has nothing to do with the toilet, Pete. I can't help myself. So,
but fair enough.
Nothing can
that
go wrong.
Works.
Fits this image to a T.
Yes.
That's right.
Perfect. Yeah.
Yeah. So that is what we will do. So, yeah.
If we can all sit here in silence for the next 10 minutes, we'll get the tornado siren from Adam. So just,
I have to go before then this time. We're going to spare everybody that.
We'll spare you all that. Yes. Thank you for hanging out with us. Thank you for sending in all your questions and quick tips and cool stuff found. And, it means the world to us to be able to do this every week. And that's thanks to all of you. So, and thanks to Cashfly for providing all the bandwidth to get the show from us to you. And don't forget, MacGeekUp.com/giveaway. Many, many copies of Marked 2. So go check that out. Go check out Adam's new show, new-ish show. It's been around for a while now. Month. Right?
Yeah, we're on we just released our third episode of the debut film podcast, and you can get that on your favorite podcast app. And we're doing Sam Rockwell, and surprisingly, his first movie is one of my favorite movies, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles from 1990.
Wow.
So that was a fun episode. I enjoyed doing that.
Cool.
Yeah.
Fun. All right. Check out Pete's show, So There I Was, Great Aviation Tales, for sure.
Yeah.
And then go ahead.
Vietnam vet the last 2 weeks with some amazing tales of buffoonery, bravery, all of good stuff.
So awesome.
We're having a ball with this too. Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And
so blessed.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. The last week when this comes out, We had Parthenon Huxley on Gig Gab. He is the guy who plays the role of Jeff Lynne in the ELO Part 2, the orchestra band with other members of ELO and other folks. Really fascinating episode. He even wrote us a little theme song on Gig Gab right at kind of impromptu at the end. So it was a fun little conversation.
Nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was cool.
So check out Gig Gab. Check out Business Brain. Thanks for hanging out with us. Thank you for everything you do. Thanks for simply listening. Don't forget about those reviews, MacGeekUp.com/reviews. We love them.
And sharing the show.
Share the show. I want to know if you're still listening. Send us a note. Where, if you listen to MacGeekUp habitually, tell us where and when you listen every week or whatever your schedule is. I want to know. Adam, do you have any advice to share before we let everybody go?
Yeah, if your toilet is running, don't get caught.
Made up.
Can we hear it one more time, Pete, before we...
It's stopped. It's done.
It's stopped.
Oh.
Later.